Okay, good. Well, welcome everybody. Welcome to our August call. If you're from a new chapter, what happens is the first half of our call is educational. We're very excited. A lot of people had requested that we get Paul Hawken on, and we're thrilled we finally got him. Then what will happen is we'll go over some of the actions that have happened since last month's call. Really remarkable, given that it's summer. You'd think things would slow down, but they haven't. I'm going to touch a little bit on Congressional Education Day that's coming up in November. Then we'll go over what we're going to be doing this month, which is really the most important thing every month is getting into action. But if you're a new chapter, for instance, some of the places we know new chapters started since last month include Bellevue, Nebraska, Greater Danbury, Connecticut, Wilmington, North Carolina, Grand Junction, Grand Valley, Colorado, Colorado Springs, Colorado, and Helena, Montana. So if you're one of those new chapters, and this is maybe your first time being on the call, welcome. Really, really great to have you. It's really, I think, exciting when you are introducing two people to each other, Paul to the organization to Paul. And one of the things that we both share in common is the belief that a change in the context or frame with which you deal with something can have a very powerful impact. So one of the things that we've been at work on in the last 8 years is trying to change the condition in which meeting with elected official occurs to one of basis of admiration, respect, gratitude for their public service. And there's really interesting comments we're seeing in the June meeting notes from the international conference. One of the Republican aides said, because of your work, this conversation is no longer toxic. So if for a Republican aide to say discussing climate change is no longer toxic is really rewarding and I think gratifying for something that has been a long haul effort to attempt to really develop respectful relationships with our members. So our guest is the author of a book called Drawdown, which I'll let him talk about and I won't say anything about it, but I want to read a little bit from the introduction because I think it's really remarkable in what he's trying to get after and probably for most people out of their reach to even consider. He says the buildup of greenhouse gases we experience today occurred in the absence of human understanding. Our ancestors were innocent of the damage they were doing. That can tempt us to believe that global warming is something that is happening to us, but we are victims of a fate that was determined by actions that precede us. If we change that preposition and consider that global warming is happening for us, remarkable statement, right? An atmospheric transformation that inspires us to change and reimagine everything we make and do and begin to live in a different world. We take 100% responsibility and stop blaming others. We see global warming not as an inevitability, but as an invitation to build, innovate, and affect change, a pathway that awakens creativity, compassion, and genius. This is not a liberal agenda. This is not a conservative agenda. This is a human agenda. So, Paul, thank you. If you didn't do anything else in the book, thank you for that statement. And if you could please just tell us about your book and kind of how you put it together and what, you know, everything you'd like to say about it. And hopefully we'll have time for some Q&A also. Good morning.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, everybody. And if there's Aussies and Kiwis here, thank you for staying up all night. I don't know if there are, but I'm so grateful that you have taken this time to spend with me and with Drawdown. I strongly believe that this is not a top-down movement or a bottom-up movement. It's a middle-out movement, and CCL to me is the middle-out. It's us going out. It's the people going out into the world. And Drawdown very much is about sort of cataloging and mapping that movement, and it's a real movement. There is an establishment climate movement, you know, the COP 21, 22, 23s, et cetera. But there is actually underneath that, the real, what I call the real movement of action, of implementation. So welcome everybody. Drawdown, Project Drawdown is a research organization. It was started 3+ years ago in response to, I felt, the lack of information in terms of where we stood or where we stand as human beings. And I've been asking this question since 2001, which is where do we stand? What do we know? What can we do? Can we reverse global warming? So we set out to map, measure, model the 100 most substantive solutions to climate change or to reversing global warming. And we did it because no one's done it before. And after 40 years of climate change and climatology and the threats therein understood, no one has ever done that. And I think it'll take an anthropologist in hindsight to explain why we never did that. I, for years and years, asked other institutions, academic and NGOs, to do it. And they said, we don't have the expertise. We can't do that. And I decided that in 2012 and 13, when Bill McKibben's piece came out, Jim Hansen's piece came out, very startling, terrifying pieces. Bill's was called, Global Warming's Terrifying New Math, so he used that, and it was terrifying. And I had so many people come to me and just say, it's game over, who are activists. And I thought about that, and I thought, well, sometimes when you give up, it's actually game on. And it's the other way around. In other words, the human psyche sometimes has to surrender. And so I decided to do Project Drawdown. And from the very outset, it seemed to me that if a small group of people said, this is what I know, or we know, this small group of we, that it would have very little credibility. And so from the very outset, I figured there had to be a collaborative, just like you're a collaborative. CCL is a collaborative. And you listen, you talk, you share, you learn from each other, and you reach out to the world. And so we needed to be the same. So really, Drawdown is a conversation of we, 240 some odd people, talking to a bigger we. So it's we talking to each other, not somebody on high or some charismatic white male vertebrate saying, I know, and here's what I know, and propagate me. It really isn't that way at all. And I want to show you, I hope this is working now, but I wanted to show you this graph, which had a really big influence on me. Not the graph, but actually the data from the graph. And this goes back to you've seen this. I think you've all seen this. This is the hockey stick. This is Al Gore's step ladder. Yeah.
I hate to interrupt. You would need to reshare your screen again. So click.
Okay. Okay. How do I do that? Let's see.
Yeah.
Go here. Share screen. Okay. There. How's that?
We're not seeing, let me check one more thing. Sorry, everyone. All participants. And did you share the particular window?
I sure hope so. It says so. Yeah. It's your window.
Hang on. Let me do this one thing.
Okay.
All right. Try, let's see if it's doing now. There. Whoop.
Got it.
No, we are not seeing your screen. Oh, wait, here, it's going right now. Here it comes.
Okay. There. Sorry. Right. Okay. Good. Well, I'll go back. Anyway, this graph you've seen, it's Michael Mann's hockey stick. It's also Al Gore's stepladder. It shows basically 400,000 years of CO2 levels in the atmosphere. And if you go back, actually, 2 million years, humankind has never lived in an atmospheric environment of over 300 parts per million of CO2. But this isn't really the actual graph. This is the actual graph, because when you put in the other greenhouse gases, that is, say, nitrous oxide and methane, hydrofluorocarbons, this is where we are. We're at 490 ppm. And the reason I mention this is because even starting in 2001, I felt like this idea of mitigation, reduction, stabilization, these nouns that were used as the goals for the climate movement were really weak and inadequate to the task at hand. When you look at this, like, why would we want to stabilize? Why would we want to reduce? Why would we want to mitigate and so forth? To me, the only thing that made sense then and now is to reverse. Let's go the other way. And I have a way of looking at the world, which is when you make a goal bigger, it gets more interesting, and there's more room for spaciousness, for imagination, for innovation, for inventiveness, for genius, for brilliance, than when you have a narrower goal. And I feel like our goal has been narrow. And at the same time, if you look at this slide, for individuals, if you Google right now the top solutions to climate change, literally this is number one and two. I've Googled this from Italy and the UK and other places in the world. This is what you get from Google. And there's nothing wrong with these. These are more like proverbs and solutions. But basically, an individual who's literate or maybe even not in terms of climate change is going to look at these and go, yeah, you know, I mean, use power strips in your home entertainment center, you know, union of concerned scientists. You go, you know that this is not adequate to the task at hand. So this is our collaboration. So we didn't have the money anyway to do it by ourselves. No one really supported us at the beginning. They said, show us your work and then, you know, show us when you're done. So we put the call out to institutions all over the world for scientists, research scientists who want to be research fellows, who would take on a solution and basically write a master's thesis. And we developed models, which we then taught them and shared with them. And that's the basis of drawdown in terms of the data. And 22 countries, 6 continents, almost half women, not quite, half PhDs, all advanced degrees, Rhodes Scholars, Fulbright Scholars, White House Fellows, Aga Khan Award winners, extraordinary human beings showed up to create Drawdown. And we have an advisory council, 128 people. This is just some of them. Some of these names, you know, there's several IPCC lead authors. There's biologists and architects and activists and engineers, et cetera, from all over the world. And what do? We just do the math and we map, measure, model the most substantive solutions. One thing, when you look at the book, and some of you have seen it, you can go to the website if you haven't, but and on the upper right-hand corner, we have rank and then reduce CO2, net cost, net savings. I just want to explain those very briefly. All carbon data, or actually CO2 data, is CO2 equivalent. So it includes other greenhouse gases, number one. Number two, all data on the carbon is peer-reviewed science. We don't take assertions, beliefs, you know, anecdotes, you know, TED Talks. None of that applies. We only use peer-reviewed data. And so what you see is the rank by carbon, and then you see the number of gigatons, metric tons of CO2 or equivalents either avoided from that solution or sequestered by land use practices. And I want to say one thing about land use here. Excuse me if I'm going too fast, but I don't have that much time. But because we only use peer-reviewed data, we can't model agroforestry. And the IPCC talks about ag and, you know, forestry. There's no such thing as ag or forestry. There's only this forest or that type of agricultural practice or that kind of grassland or grazing practice. And so because we only relied on peer-reviewed data, we then came up with 23 distinct land use practices that made the top 100. So it's the first time that I think these practices have been identified. They're all scaling, and that's another important point about these solutions. We had 100 solutions, 80 we modeled, 20 we could not because they're incipient. Of those 80, all of them are extant. We know them well, we understand them. I call them W.W. Granger. You know, we definitely know how to do it. We've been doing it for some time, quite a long time, and they're all scaling. And so what we did is scale these solutions over the next 30 years in a rigorous but reasonable way. Say, well, if these continue to scale and there's no obstacle to them scaling over that time, what would be the impact? Could we achieve that point in time of drawdown, which is when greenhouse gases peak and go down on a year-to-year basis? That was our goal. I think that should be humanity's goal. And that was the purpose of doing the modeling, to see where do we stand, how much does it cost, can we do it, and can we do it in a reasonable amount of time. What you see in the bottom is net cost and savings. Some people don't understand this. Net cost is compared to the business as usual scenario for generating electricity. That would be combined cycle gas or coal. And And in this case, where geothermal is applicable, it's less expensive than those sources. So it's actually a minus. In other words, you save money by doing geothermal. Again, in those places where this is applicable, it's not applicable everywhere. And then the last thing you have is, what is the net savings by 2050? Again, compare a net cost, but compared to business as usual. Now, on the financial side, everything we use on that from data sources is widely respected international institutions. We use the IPCC for sure. We use the International Energy Agency. We use the World Bank. We use EASA. We use IRENA. We use JP Morgan, Goldman Sachs, Bloomberg. And so all the data we have, none of it is our data. All our data, again, as I said earlier, is reflecting back to the world what we know now. Now, we know this. What we've done is arrange it in a certain way so that it's accessible, so we can see it, and then, which is, like I said, never been done before. This, I just want to show you just quickly solutions, just and mostly to give you a sense of the diversity of solutions. The conversation has been about energy, 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 really, you know, and occasionally don't eat so much meat and don't cut trees. But basically, the mantra has been clean energy, solar, wind, Elon Musk, EVs, etc. I mean, that's kind of been the mantra, as if we did those things, we get a hall pass to the 22nd century. And that's simply not true. It won't work. That's a scientific mistake to assume that's true. Those solutions are critical and crucial to solving the problem. I'm not gainsaying them. I'm just saying it's a system that caused the problem. It's a system that is going to heal it and cure it. This is high-speed rail. Japanese pretty much own this one right now. This is indigenous people's land management. Nobody's better at protecting the forests in the world than those people who are the original inhabitants. That's what indigene means. It means the original inhabitant. That's what indigenous is, the adjective of that. This is improved rice production. There's two ways to do it, but either way is a significant reduction in methane. As you'll see, there's no cost because it's just a matter of teaching the farmer next door, walking across your paddy to the next. Big savings because it actually improves productivity. And it's really, both techniques are about pulling water off the paddy for a while and letting it be aerobic instead of anaerobic. This is clean cook stoves. Again, this is exemplary of why this is, we measure by carbon. Okay. But every one of these solutions has cascading benefits in so many other areas. And this is for the health of mothers and children, or anybody in the domicile that's using conventional cook stoves is going to be harmed by the emissions and the black carbon. So what a important solution. This is onshore wind. And what we tried to do in imagery is simply to break the cliches. And what you see again is a wind turbine on it's a blue sky, and there's, you know, green grass and wildflowers and children playing in the foreground, you know, and go, oh, wow, what a terrible place to put a wind turbine. The wind turbines want to be in places like this where the weather is really pissy. This is a Norfolk, the Sheringham Shoal in Norfolk. These are Siemens 3-megawatt wind turbines. This is a triathlete swimming by. It's not Photoshop, but again, what we want to do is kind of get people into different imagery than calving glaciers, you know, stranded polar bears, hurricane vortices, or cliches about the solutions. We want to get people involved and interested and fascinated, you know. This is rooftop solar. This is an Urdu woman in Lake Titicaca. She lives on a straw island. She has to put new straw down every 3 months to stay afloat. Those are her daughters. She was literally using kerosene in a straw island to light things at night so her daughters could study. Her smile is not just, it has nothing to do with carbon, has everything to do with making her life safer and better for her family. This one is a Dasarak woman from Ethiopia. They built a bridge across their village from Kenya to Ethiopia. They created a bar for the men. The women went over in the morning and picked up everything the men were throwing away. You can see nails and SIM cards and watch bands, mostly bottle caps. And they started to make headdresses and jewelry with it and now sell it to boutiques in France. This is how we call this household recycling. And then we have coming attractions. We'll just go through them very briefly, which are just, these are solutions that are scientifically valid, that are working, but there is no data to basically model them. They're too incipient, nascent. What we want to give people a sense is that the 80 solutions we model are not all at hand. And there was going to be a lot more available to us coming, that humanity is basically on the case. It is not numb and you know, sort of resigned and stupid, which is so often what the kind of the sense you get, you know, that we're asleep at the wheel. We're not asleep at the wheel. Marine permaculture is a way to reverse ocean acidification, coral reef bleaching, and to create literally 10 billion pounds more of protein every year for the world. This is skyscrapers building with wood, literally the Torch Tower in Dubai, the Grenfell Tower in London would not have burned down if they had been made of wood. And I know that's counterintuitive. Go ahead, look at the book, look at the Yale study on wood structures and why they're safer from fire. Huge impact though on carbon emissions without steel and concrete. This probably is the coming attraction I love the most. Aussies probably know about this. This is basically started in Prince Edward Island in Canada. A farmer noticed that his cows, which are his dairy farmer joins the beach, and those cows that were eating seaweed were producing more milk. Why? Who knew? He asked the county agent, who didn't know, got a scientist, Rob Fairley, who said it must be because they're producing less methane, because methane is such an inefficient metabolic process and not really innate to having a ruminant produce milk or meat or whatever a ruminant's doing. And so they separated them, fed some kelp, some not, and then put bags over their heads five times a day to measure the exhalations of the dairy cow, and discovered, in fact, yes, it did reduce methane emissions, but it was so impractical. It was like a science experiment. And but then he got in touch with a scientist in Queensland, Australia, and together they discovered a algae called Taxiformis, Asparagopsis taxiformis, which is what the native Hawaiians eat. It's delicious and grows all over the world. And when fed in a 2% quantity to ruminants, sheep, cows, and goats, will reduce methane emissions by a minimum of 70 up to 90%. So it's a huge impact. And anyway, this guy now is talking to this guy, and they're forming a business together to grow Asparagopsis taxiformis, and which then deacidifies the ocean and cools it. So what surprises everything, what surprises is food was a bigger sector than energy. Now, energy here is electrical energy generation. I want to make very clear. Energy is everywhere on this. Reason solar and wind together are not number one and two is because all these things affect energy and they reduce the amount of energy that's being used, you know, with almost without exception. And of course, there's energy itself in terms of substitution. Wind is the number two solution. But as you can see, look at, and these sectors are arbitrary in some ways. I mean, materials, buildings, and cities. Buildings and cities are huge, but so many of the areas that are involved there are in other sectors, so in energy. This surprised us. The number three solution is reduce food waste. And the point I want to make here is that every number you see in drawdown is conservative. And that was a bias. We did have a bias to make everything conservative. So if anybody came after the numbers, they'd say, oh, you've egged the pudding, it's too high, it's too this. We're saying, oh, no, we did not. This does not count methane emissions from food that is landfilled. it doesn't count it. So, and you can look on the website for the exact methodology what we do measure, but even then it's number three. Number four is plant-rich diet, which is really, again, it's not saying the world has to be vegan or vegetarian. That's your choice. Good idea. But what we're saying is that in the northern developed countries, so-called developed, anyway, rich countries, they're over-consuming protein, 100, 110 grams per day of animal protein, very unhealthy for the human body, very unhealthy for the planet, as you know. So we reduce that to 50, 60 grams, and we have a proportion of plant-based protein in there. In the countries where there's nutritional shortages, we up those on both in protein and caloric intake to 50 grams and 2,500 calories. And even then, we came in at number four. And then finally, the big surprise was this one, educating girls, and it combines basically with family planning. They're number six and seven. And when you combine them both, they're the number one solution to reversing global warming. And basically what it measures is the difference in population in 2050 between the UN high projection and the median projection. And the UN says that's entirely due to access to family planning. If you educate a girl as allow her to stay in school instead of yanking her out at pre-puberty, she becomes a woman more on her terms, and she chooses to plan her family and has an average of two children. If she's pulled out of school for cultural, religious, familial, economic reasons at, you know, 12, 13, whatever, she has an average of five children. The woman who goes through and matriculates, or the girl that matriculates, her children do the same. They're healthier. She's better economically because of her education. And family planning simply means clinics that are available everywhere in the world, including this country, by the way, in the U.S., that'll give women their support for reproductive health and well-being for their family and children. So, and energy is there, but it's not as big as everybody says they thought it would be. Rooftop and solar are 8 and 10 combined. You can see they would be just under tropical forest. Doesn't mean there can't be greater than that, but these are going against, these are the most positive projections right now for the IEA and other agencies, ARENA. We can do better, but again, we use other people's data and so forth. So if you combine number 22, which is offshore wind, with number two, onshore wind, then it would become the number one solution. And this is what the solutions look like in a pie chart. And I just want to show this. We need all of this to achieve drawdown. And the idea, we tend to think of what are the big ones? What should I do? The question you get all the time is, what's the number one thing we can do? The number one thing we can do is everything. Not one. And so I just want to emphasize, there's no such thing as a small solution. There's no such thing as a small organ in your body, okay? It all goes together. And I just want to emphasize that this is what solves the problem. And we're all in this together. We cause it together. We heal it and cure it together. And I just want to say on the book, this is the book cover, and I'll stop here. The title, The Most Comprehensive Plan Ever Proposed to Reverse Global Warming, I didn't title that. It was a Stanford intern working at Penguin a year ago. And he came up, this is the verso for the back of the book, and they sent it to me. And I said, no, 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 we're not a plan. We never said we're going to make a plan. And I left it on my desk. I kept looking at it. And kind of was intrigued by it. It's so brash and cheeky, this subtitle, the reading line. But then I realized two things about it that are true. It is the most comprehensive plan ever proposed, because no one's proposed one. No one's ever proposed a plan to reverse global warming. And the reason it's a plan isn't because we didn't make the plan at Drawdown, not at all. We're reflecting back to the world what it knows. In other words, we're saying, we do have a plan. We don't know it. It did not come from Al Gore, or it did not come from Christina Figueres. It did not come from Jeffrey Sachs. It didn't come from Princeton University. It came from all of us. I'm not excluding them. I'm just saying it came from all of us. And that, again, bear in mind, the A solutions we model are all scaling. They're happening. There's nothing that Donald Trump can do about those, you know. So it is the most comprehensive plan ever proposed to reverse global warming, but I'm saying it's not Drawdown's plan. It's not our organization. We're not smarter than the rest of the world. We actually, as I said, are trying to show the world what it knows. And I'll stop right there. Thank you so much.
Great. So, Paul, thank you so much. That was absolutely beautiful. I'm sure everybody's very excited out in the field. Just so everybody knows, the question that came in most frequently in advance of the call was, what impact on these solutions would a price on carbon have? And Paul said it will accelerate them. So that was the main question that was asked. And his response was, it'll increase the rate at which all this happens. We're going to have you back sometime for a more extensive Q&A, because there's all kinds of questions people are going to want to ask. But you're welcome to stay on for the next 10 minutes or so if you like. But if you have to drop off, we understand. But Paul, that was fantastic. Thank you for the work, and thank you for making yourself available on a Saturday morning.
Absolutely.
On a beautiful day. Great. Thank you.
I want to say
all
something.
All right, everybody.
No, Mark, I want to say something about that. First of all, is there going to be questions?
No, there's. We're not going to have time to do questions today. We'll have to ask you back for another time for that.
I thought it was 20 minutes of presentation, 20 minutes of Q&A.
But anyway, the call is supposed to be done in 10 minutes, so it was supposed to be 15 minutes of questions and 10 minutes of Q&A, but that's fine.
But I just want to say to everybody two things. One is, the questions are the best part, not my presentation.
Yep.
I never learn anything when I'm talking. Second, on a carbon pricing, what I did say is, it's not, people asked us if it was why we didn't include it as a solution. It is not a solution. It's a policy. And we have to make a distinction between those. It's a policy. There's no policy. There's nothing that would accelerate these more quickly than carbon pricing. Nothing would do more. There's not a single solution in Drawdown that wouldn't accelerate every solution would accelerate if we had carbon pricing. Key things. So anyway, thank you so much. Thank you, everybody.
Paul, thank you so much. Yep, great. And again, that was the most consistent question, and Paul's consistently, both electronically and over the phone, told us that it is the factor that accelerates everything. Okay, a couple of things before we get into what everybody's going to do this month is, you know, you'd think people would slow down in the summer a little bit, and particularly in Canada, you know, they don't get a huge window of time where it's nice to be outdoors. Canada usually has 25 to 30 letters to the editor every month. They had 116 alone in the month of July. The total organization published 322 letters to the editor and 67 op-eds. Remarkable. We're starting to do the analysis of the June meetings. Of over 500 meetings with Congress, 21% of those were face-to-face. That's usually only 9%, because members get pulled away so often during the conference to committee hearings, et cetera. So the relationships you've been building with people are paying off, where the members are making sure that they're in the meetings more than ever. Also on the endorsement front, we have more endorsements this year, 1,091, than we had in the previous 2 years combined. Also, there's been some fantastic tours that are happening. The Kentucky tour happened, where we visited four cities. And in the outreach events, we met with multiple McConnell and Trump supporters, none of whom pushed back on carbon fee and dividends. So great work to Don and Zori and everybody that was involved in the Kentucky tour. The Montana tour is just wrapping up, or as they call it, the Stampede, where they visited places that included Helena, Billings, and Bozeman. The Minnesota tour starts today. The next Texas Energy Freedom Tour is in the planning process. And some of you remember in 2014 when we did the first Texas Energy Freedom Tour. At that point, we had 3 chapters and 6 in process in Texas. We now have 12 chapters in Texas with 38 in process. And that's a state that only has 36 congressional districts. As part of the initial Texas Energy Freedom Tour, we now have 3 chapters in Chairman Brady's district. Chairman Brady is chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, which is the most important committee we see in the House. Those chapters now have 500 people in those 3 chapters. So great work there. The Washington and Oregon tours are in the prep planning process, so those will be happening soon. And for those of you who are interested in putting a tour on, CCL University, August 31st, will be on how you organize those tours in states, regions, etc. Also, we will be opening registration in the first week of September for our November Educational Day. If you've never been part of our organization, after we see over 500 offices in November, we go back in June, we go back in November and say, here's what we learned about you with respect to dealing with global warming, and here's how that changes over time. So for instance, 3 years ago, the most frequently raised issue is what we call China, which is essentially the argument, if we do something and other countries don't, will it hurt our competitiveness? The next year, the most frequently raised issue was the dividend itself. So it seemed like there was a change in mindset from, here's why this would never work, to, well, if we did what you're saying, how would this particular piece work? Last year, this is really interesting also, the most frequently raised issue or question last year was about the Climate Solutions Caucus itself. So I think our constant argument for bipartisanship and taking this issue outside of being a partisan issue is having traction. And I actually think you're beginning to see the impact of that on other areas also. So I don't think it's just our relentless commitment to take partisanship out of this issue. I think you're beginning to see the emergence of more bipartisanship. So Danny Richter's about 20% through the notes at this point. So we will be educating ourselves on what we know about Congress and taking that back again. That's November 13th and 14th. November 13th, the Monday, is an educational day. Tuesday the 14th will be on the Hill. Then we'll be having a reception back at the hotel, which I strongly recommend. This October will be the 10th, and we'll be 10 years old. And so we're going to use that reception to just celebrate our 10 years a little bit. And if you have the chance to be in D.C. a little bit early on Sunday night, we'll be showing Chasing Coral. For those of you who've seen it, you know it's a really remarkable piece of work. And so we'll be showing that Sunday night if you have a chance to get there early. Okay, so what are we doing this month? Well, in Canada, we're going to be asking you to reach out to people about the October conference that we're having in Ottawa again. Those continue to grow and be really remarkable. To also ask you to sign the business leaders letter and to join LTE teams. After the 116 remarkable numbers of letters to the editor in Canada, we want to continue to grow that in Canada. In the US, we're asking you to schedule presentations with community groups, and particularly groups on the left. So the Food and Water Watches, the 350s, the Sierra Club. What we don't want to do is assume anybody's support. We want to earn everybody's support. And we know the best way we do that is going to their meetings, listening to them, finding out what they're interested in accomplishing, trying to figure out how we can help them with that. We don't want to lead with what we're doing. We always want to lead with how good we listen to people, what they see needs to happen, and how we can help them do that. So we'd like you during the month of August to reach out to groups and see if you can go meet with them. Those meetings are usually best done one-on-one, listening to one person, but if you can set up a talk or something, that would be fantastic also. We're asking all of you to write letters to the editor calling for congressional action on climate change. 322 is one of the biggest months we've ever had in July, but we'd like to exceed that in August. And then please practice the laser talk. You know, it's about the Climate Solutions Caucus. And the nice thing about the caucus is some people were worried when we started it that this was just greenwashing. But now you see they're starting to vote in ways that are ways that we would hope they would vote. And so we want to make sure that we're very facile when people ask Climate Solutions Caucus that we can speak to it. So again, everybody, I'll ask Ricky to unmute the lines in just a second so we can all give a big shout out and thank Paul again for making himself available on a Saturday. Thank you all for what you're doing. It is remarkable. I'm blown away on a day in and day out basis of the information I get from you of what you're making happen out there in the field. Thanks, everybody. Have a great Saturday. Our guest next month will be Xiling Su, the great economist who wrote A Case for a Carbon Tax.